everybody, and welcome to Talking XP. I'm Johnny, the host, along with Ryan. And today we are going to be interviewing Jeremy with Mimics and Miniatures. I love the alliteration, but it's so hard to get out sometimes. But how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. I'm doing all right.
Right back at you.
Yeah. No, everything's going pretty well. We've been pretty busy because we have a campaign that we're going to be starting up here pretty soon. But
are you still into the one shots?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's what I was going to say, is that like these one shots, we were able to take advantage and play the one shot that you guys had made, the play tester for your soon to go live Kickstarter, the Reign of the Necromancer. That was a lot of fun. If anybody that's listening hasn't seen it, we actually played this playtester one shot on our Twitch channel on June 28th, and we've also posted it onto our YouTube channel, so go ahead and check it out after the interview. We'll have links and all the good stuff in the description. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun just jumping into a different land and having, you know, different rules, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah. Were you able to catch the stream?
I didn't catch the stream. I've watched most of it at this point. I didn't quite finish out the... Yeah, I ran out of time when I had my chunks set. But I did get to see most of it.
Yeah, it was a long one.
We are running out of time on our end, too.
Yeah, it was a long one. Cool. Well, then, since you caught it after the actual streaming, you saw the video on our YouTube. What did you think?
It was fun. It was fun to see you. I mean, I was very excited to see how you interacted with material, because sometimes I feel like I'm creating material in a vacuum, so I'm never sure how people are going to interact and what assumptions I'm coming in with. Like, oh, yeah, it totally makes sense. I'm like, oh, yes, I forgot to explain what was happening there.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally get that. It's like, it's that trying to find the balance between explaining it enough to where it's like, that's it, and then over-explaining to where it's like, okay, we get it. And it's like, how do you find that fine line? No, I totally get that. Yeah, that's tough. It's tough, especially as a DM, because I mean, like, when you're going into rooms, how much do you explain what's important, what's not important? And then if you are bare minimum and then you say one thing that seems to be important, obviously everybody's going to jump on it. But yeah.
Yeah.
So then was there anything that you would have changed the way that we ran this session?
I don't think so. I wondered a little bit why you didn't use a few of the maps provided, but then I realized, depending on the playtest version you got, you didn't have the maps that we created for it. So they probably didn't have that.
I think the only three maps I was given by Phil was the final encounter.
Yeah, and then everything else was probably like a pencil drawing. Yeah.
No, I did get like the small cave, like the camp, like that the bandits could potentially have, and then I had the other like corner cave, that was for like the will-o-wisp, but I didn't end up using that encounter, for either of those encounters, because they didn't catch up with the bandits
Fair.
I loved the random encounter for the mimic, so I made sure to include that.
Yeah.
Because I love the idea of a mimic just screwing over a party who's desperate for water. Yeah. They weren't desperate for water, but
no,
it's still...
By no means. And that, I think that was the funniest part, too, was that, like, the whole time I knew something was up. I knew something was up. There was no reason why this camp just had water still there and blah, 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 blah. And... So I was just trying to figure out, I was like, okay, maybe there's something invisible in these prisons. Maybe that's what it is. Nothing. And then I did not expect the fucking mimic to be in there.
The way I justified it was that I built the encounter with the idea that there was like slavers of some kind that were basically taking the wilderness animals and selling them on the probably a black market of some kind. And basically the reason why there was nobody there, my idea was that the mimic had oozed its way through across everything like a gelatinous cube and just ate everything that was there.
Yeah.
That was my thought.
That's good. I think in my head, it's more of the, like, you know, I think of these mimics setting up as ambush hunters. So they're somewhat aware of the traffic that's coming through, and then they're positioning themselves in a place where hopefully they'll come into contact with a good. Honestly, by the time we got to the mimic encounter, I was a little surprised because I remember thinking about that encounter, but I didn't actually remember writing that encounter.
Oh,
I was like, oh, is that actually in there? I didn't think I'd ever gotten around to writing.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was just a random encounter that was part of one of the tables that I just latched onto.
Yeah, okay. So I was like,
gotcha.
Gosh, I know I had a thought about that encounter, and that's exactly how I would have done it, but I didn't actually remember writing it. So that, there we go.
Yeah, I'm just trying to give a little bit more urgency because I think that happened during the storm. That way gave them something to do during that day, because they found the cave, I think, pretty fast.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I think during the stream, because I played Guide, the turtle that was from the land. And yeah. I feel like he would have definitely known what happened with the storm, but I think it was super funny that we ran like a flashback kind of thing where I casted something and then it shot down. That was awesome. That was so funny.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we could actually like have that in the stream and like show that little bit about the you know, the storms that are in there.
I do really like that one. Another group I know of who ran it ended up hitting that storm right before they fought the bandits.
Oh no.
They didn't know what was happening because they didn't have anybody native. So they ended up electrocuting randomly one of the bandits that they were fighting, and then they were very excited to do that.
Oh, wow, so, that's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, it worked out very well for them.
That's so cool. Well, was there anything different that you liked that we had actually used in the...
I definitely took notice when you guys ran the little bit of the crashed airship core. For me, I was thinking that would be more of a hinting at a bigger picture, you know, a little bit of world building that's not really important to the adventure, but just hinting at the mysteries that might develop in the future. But you ran it more as that little salvage operation thing going on, which gave it more of an immediacy to the story. Rather than just a loose thread to be picked up at some point in the future. So it was, I liked it. I hadn't thought of running it that way. So
awesome. Honestly, the source of that idea was I included that NPC there because I was anticipating one of the players dying and I wanted to make sure I had a backup character for them ready to go.
There you go.
And then it turned out not needing it at all, but...
Which we almost did die, but even before the time that we actually met the guy, that like centipede encounter was insane. And not only that, but like I kept on missing. Like everybody just kept on whiffing the hits.
It was rough on the hit. And I was very surprised how much devastation happened due to the centipedes.
Right. No, it was a good encounter.
I don't know. Phil. My co-part here was very excited to launch this story, having lived in Hawaii for a year or so. We never actually met each other in Hawaii, but we have mutual friends from Hawaii because I have also lived in Hawaii a bit. And I don't know if you guys know this, but centipedes are like, nobody likes a centipede in Hawaii. And everybody who's spent any time there is like, oh, centipedes, like, nah, I hate those things.
That's so awesome.
So they're just this like, and it's not like they're deadly, but nobody likes a centipede. And everyone has this like skin crawling, visceral, like, yeah, you know, you're sitting around a campfire up in the forest, say, and someone's like, a centipede, like everyone jumps up and runs away. You know, it's that kind of moment. So this little encounter was more, it wasn't really supposed to be a like deadly encounter. It was just the like, it was for all my Hawaiian friends who were like, oh, centipedes, freaking, I hate those.
Yeah,
things.
I love it. That's so awesome. That's so cool.
They just like almost rolled you guys because you were whiffing on all the attack rolls.
Yeah, I know. And sometimes it just happens. It happens. It's funny.
See, I just loved in that moment you guys kept going up and down. You guys were just trading who was up.
God, it was so tough, and I'm so glad that I had the good berries, because if I didn't, I would have been screwed. We would have been screwed. There would have been no way to get back.
Johnny, quick tip here for you.
Oh.
Your familiar, if it has hands, should be able to use its action to feed people good berries.
Huh. Well, I had a flying snake, so didn't have hands, but...
You can use its mouth.
I mean, depending on who your DM is, you could put it in his mouth, drop it in someone else's mouth. Like,
that is like true.
You could talk your way into a free get-me-up, you know, with one HP, but it's enough to resurrect a person from fainting.
That is a very good point, though, because, like, yeah, they can't attack, but it doesn't say that they can't do their action, so they can use their action to... Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I never even thought of that.
If you don't have, like, you know, your healing word bonus action,
right.
Like a little monkey or something, or maybe an owl, or your flying snake, you're very helpful to feed a good berry to someone who's just gone down.
Awesome. I'm going to put that in my back pocket, and we're going to use that later. Right on. Well, do you have any helpful tips for any DMs or other players that may be picking up the Reign of the Necromancer whenever you actually go for the release?
Helpful tips. I mean, I've been considering writing a few, like, this is what I think about these kinds of things, you know, like, I intended it to work this way, but I don't know if there's anything I would just give off right off the bat. That being said, gosh, I feel like there was something that I thought of, then I was like, oh, Ryan's got a different style than I do, and, but I can't remember what that was.
Yeah. That's all right.
Nope, if
something comes up,
time.
You know what, if it comes up, watch. What's going to happen is we're going to say our goodbyes. Then like an hour later, you're going to be like, oh, that's what it was. And we'll add it to the description or something like that. So, or if there's any point in this interview that it just comes out, just go, feel free to just completely go off the rails.
It
yeah.
Is.
Yeah. So kind of focusing on, you know, mimics and miniatures and yourself. How long have you actually been playing TTRPGs in general, if only D&D or whatever?
Okay, so as a child, I was going through my parents' library at some point, which was like a bookshelf, right? Just like the one bookshelf. And down way in the back, I found this box that was like a knockoff D&D from way back in the day called Dragon Raid. And I was like, Dad, like, what is this? I opened the box and there's all these little like pewter die casts and a bunch of randomly sided dice and sheets full of data and charts. And I'm like, this looks amazing. What is this? And he's like, oh yeah, we used to play that. And so I convinced him to run a campaign for me when I was like 10. And that was my first experience with TTRPGs. And I thought it was great. And, you know, I have all of the visions of Lord of the Rings in my head. And, you know, the first encounter, we'd like raided some dragon's castle. And, like, we sneak in and I saw these orcs patrolling down the hallway. And I'm like, orcs are bad. Like, we're supposed to kill them. So, like, throw off concealment, like, charge the first guards I see and just get demolished. It was
heck
wonderful.
Heck yes. What better way to jump into TTRPGs than to get just demolished by orcs? I love it.
Yeah,
it
was
that's
good.
So great.
So, it was a good time, but obviously it's a lot of work to keep a campaign running for your children. So,
yeah,
not something that we did a lot.
Just to say, it's hard to make a campaign for not children. Just to keep a campaign for adults is difficult because they have their own different sets of difficulties with scheduling and making sure that you have time to meet with the DM. It's difficult.
As well
yeah.
as, you know, children of their own and other, other things. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, anyway, sorry.
No, and so after that, there are a few experiences in school where, like, some friends wanted to try it and we always, like, we were super excited about it. We'd do all the work, get the characters together, and usually play like a one-off, you know? It was supposed to be some epic campaign, but always ended up being just a one shot.
Unfortunately, I've had that happen before as well. I think that's one of the bane of D&D's existence is just that, you know, the new is so awesome, and then it's just like, okay, all right.
Yeah. But anyway, so then Acquisitions Incorporated, right? Them doing their videos at PAX right before they launched D&D Next, so they were right at the end of fourth edition,
my brother was like, dude, you gotta watch these, they're hilarious. So I was like, yeah.
Oh, they're so funny.
I hadn't thought about Dungeons and Dragons in forever. I hadn't, along with Dragon Raid, we had my dad also had the Red Box. So like, I hadn't touched a Dungeons and Dragons really since Red Box. Yeah. I had seen, obviously, always at the bookstore, you know, all of the fourth edition monster manuals, and sometimes you just sit and look through that when you have nothing else to do at Borders or Barnes and Nobles or whatever.
May Borders rest in peace.
May they rest in peace. Yeah. So he sends me one of their videos, and I'm like, these guys are hilarious. So I start watching those, go through everything they had, caught up currently. They launched D&D Next, right? So they started doing the playtest right as they were beginning to release the fifth edition. And I put a group together where I was at in Hawaii at the time. And we played Lost Mines of Phandelver. We played Horde of the Dragon Queen. We played Rise of Tiamat. And, you know, we played for like 4 years playing through all of that. And then it was like, yeah, that. And since then, branched out a little bit more. We're like, well, this is great. Let's try some other systems, see what we'd like. I really got excited about, I love sci-fi as well, so I was looking for a strong sci-fi. Really got into Stars Without Number. Without Numbers, if you guys have...
Stars Without Numbers.
Yes, yes. Lots of fun.
I'll have to look into that.
I really liked it. A lot of my friends were just barely getting the grasp of D&D's D20 system, and they were really not ready to learn another. Stars uses a lot of 3d6 rolls.
Gotcha.
So a little bit different. The probabilities, I mean, it's basically the same probability, but they're aggregated in the middle a little bit more, you know?
Right, right.
So it just rolls different, and they weren't ready for that. And that one didn't really take off. Checked out Fantasy Flight's Star Wars, obviously, because being a sci-fi fan, how could you not? Love the One Ring Shadow Track. Anyways, looked into several different, but with its popularity, it's really hard not to play D&D just, you know, at the table.
Yeah, I mean, they have a wealth of resources and knowledge, and
yeah.
I mean, they have the resources to do that, so that's why it's so much popular, you know, than other systems. But yeah, no, I think that testing out other systems is like the best way to make D&D better, because you can learn all of these different rules and be like, oh, how would I do that? I don't know, try this from this other system. Which I think that it's, if you're happy with D&D as it is, cool. If you're not, try out other ones, see if you can make it better, you know. That's happening.
How did you enjoy the Fantasy Flight Star Wars?
Let's see. I picked it up, and we had the first module, so they didn't really have any Force users yet, right? And it was like, oh, but like, if you're gonna play Star Wars, why would not be a Jedi? Of course, that's
right,
a no-brainer. So
yeah,
nobody was really excited about it, because they're like, what is it? Like, what? I'm just a
human.
I
don't want
to be Han Solo. I want to be Luke Skywalker. Yeah.
I'm so, not sure if you were.
No, go for it.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, I'm not sure if you were familiar with the SW5e conversion that is...
I saw that you guys did that. I think I saw a couple articles when whoever put that out. But I haven't looked into that conversion.
It is by far, from all of the conversions I've seen done, it's, I think, probably the most expansive that I've ever seen.
Right.
And it's very, like, their website is so... clean, like literally it's cleaner than Roll20's like compendium. It's
oh, okay,
janky, like messed up. Yeah
it's way better than Roll20's compendium, which is all crazy, right. But I definitely recommend checking them out, because they were so much content, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
they have a Discord. It's awesome.
All right. Yeah, I think what I was most attracted to about Fantasy Flight's Star Wars was because they also do the they have their space combat miniatures
expandable packs, right? And
yeah,
though none of the rules actually overlap, it would be so easy to like, hey, we're busting these prisoners out of this space station. We get to the dock, we steal a TIE fighter, and then the game transitions into this tactical
right
on the table. And being able to transition into the miniatures, like full on, less of the TTRPG and more. Anyways, yeah, being able to
like
transition
a chess
between the
like,
two,
like exactly, it's like chess basically at that yeah point. Yeah, you're like, yeah, okay, how does this unit move? How does this one? Yeah, no, yeah, that's totally.
I was really excited about that. However, I've never had the budget to invest to really make that a reality.
So then. The miniatures, yeah, that's one thing that they're expensive if yeah you want to get all the yes good ones, but yes, definitely look into SW5E. It is
all right
a lot of fun, and we actually played one on a one shot. I know that you referenced yeah that, but like we went into that almost specific example. We were in a death, right, not a Death Star, sorry, Star Destroyer, and yeah we jumped onto a ship, and you know, we had this whole thing before that. We like got into battle with a bunch of stormtroopers, jumped onto our ship, almost died, got out of there, got pulled back by the tractor beam of the Star Destroyer. Yeah. We had TIE fighters everywhere. It was a lot of fun. And it's exactly what you said. It's like we went from in person to in ship, and then we moved back into it was awesome. It flowed really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
So how long have you been making content for TTRPGs?
Oh yeah. So at this point, I ran Reign of the Dragon Queen and Tiamat for some friends. That took mm-hmm us a good 18 months to play through.
Yeah, I was gonna say
transition
like 2 years.
The DM hat. To, yeah, yeah. Transition the DM hat to another friend, and then as we kind of were moving, some of them moved away. You know, suddenly it was like, well, we can't commit to long distance. Like weekly, there's just too many different time zones to play with and make that a reality. So we started running, and we really weren't finding a bunch of one shots that we liked. There's always the fun like theme one, like there's always good Christmas ones.
Of course,
why? But
yeah,
I like love it. There's always good Christmas one shots.
Mm-hmm.
But we started writing our own content for that. So I was doing shorter campaigns with my friends, but that's when we started writing our own homebrew. Yeah.
Yeah. Right on.
Usually, we're inspired by wherever we were at the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, like, if it's like October, you do like a Halloween one or something like that.
Oh, no. So, more like I was visiting my family in Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, you know what? We should really have a desert campaign.
Right.
And not like an Arabian desert, but why not? Because I've never seen one of those. So, let's do that. So, we were running that for a little while.
And hence the Reign of the Necromancer.
Yeah, and yeah. So So a lot of the desert stuff was kind of the holdover from the last one that I was like, I didn't get to do these concepts, so let's play with this as we're crossing this desert here in Arimithia.
Yeah, that's like the rule number one of DMs. It's like if you can't use it now, just retweak yeah it and use it later. That's exactly what happened. That's awesome. That's so cool.
It's all percolating back there still.
Right. I was going to ask what inspired you to make this campaign setting, but it sounds like Arizona did it.
So truly, Arimithia is inspired by a lot of the inspiration does come from some time I lived in Hawaii. Not being a native boy myself, you know, I'm definitely a Haole, but from my time there, I would say mostly inspired by the topography and the climate of the island. I hope there will be some stuff that really, to someone who knows what they're seeing, feels like a respectful homage, especially in some of the, I mean, it'd come out mostly in the lore probably, but it's not like I'm trying to recreate Hawaii in a game. It's just like, these were, you know, experiences I had while living there, things that I appreciated about their culture, perhaps. That's going to work its way into the world building, and it'll be subtly there, as it were, you know?
Yeah, I think it's impossible not to have real world experiences influence the way that you make your content. Like,
yeah,
that's, I mean, and I think that makes content better. because then somebody can see that and be like, oh, I've actually experienced this before. And then they can be the player to be like, oh, this is how you solve that, or you know, some stuff like that. So I think, yeah, no, that's unavoidable.
Yeah. So interesting thing, kind of an aside, but related to that. Right now I'm in Birmingham in the United Kingdom. Out here, because my wife is in grad school, and her, otherwise there's really, it'd kind of be strange to move to Birmingham. But after moving here, we discovered that J.R.R. Tolkien lived here as a boy. And there are several areas around here that people are like, this is what inspired him to write Fangorn Forest. And this was what inspired the Tower of Sauron, you know, and just kind of the, and I, so I'm like, hey, let's do the thing and go look at these places that inspired these things. And it's like, wow, like I can see it, but I would never, if I didn't know, I would not have picked guess. Like, hey, this feels like,
Yeah. So. No, I saw pictures of like stuff that, of people saying like that kind of stuff. And I was like, dude, I want to go and I want to see that. But like, yeah, no, I just from the pictures, I'm like, that's weird. And I know the what was it? I think it was the Mines of Moria door. I think there was like this like archway, and then it led to like a stone door or something like that. I can't remember exactly if it was that or something else. But I was like, this is a cool archway. I never would have guessed unless somebody said like, this is where he got the inspiration from that. Yeah. And it's such a cool, that's on my bucket list for sure. Is to go and see those kind of things.
Yeah. So, circling back, Eremithia, definitely the topography, really inspired by topography in Hawaii. And then some of the desert stuff, obviously, from my Arizona time spent in Phoenix and the Sonoran Desert.
How long have you guys been working on this project?
It's kind of been a late COVID project, so... Mimics and Miniatures, Phil started earlier and kind of ran through that to do some miniatures. But then the rain has been only the last couple of months or so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were actually about mid to late COVID project for Talking XP 2. So I totally get it. It's just like,
hey, we should really do something.
Exactly. I think that this just changed everything. It's insane. But anyways, we'll get over that. That's real life stuff.
Is this the first project that you and Phil have worked on together, or you guys have done other
stuff? It is. Yes, it is. And it was kind of that we moved out here to Birmingham and I was looking for work and had been expecting to work, but nobody was hiring because everything was kind of frozen and on lockdown.
Right.
So I'm reaching out to my friends and like, hey, what are you guys doing? Do you need any help? Is there anything I can do remotely for you? And one of my buddies was like, hey, meet my buddy Phil over here. He's working. He's looking to launch a new project and I'm sure he could use help. I'll connect you to
That's cool.
That was that was my buddy Neil with Soma Games. They're doing all of the Redwall license stuff, so check them out.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
My fiance Sabrina, who played in our one shot, her sister Sammy works for Soma Games as well. How
great.
We were connected to Phil as well.
There we go. Yep, see, Neil's a good connector. Love those guys.
Yeah, we'll have a link to Soma Games and all that good stuff in the description as well, so you can all check it out. But so Mimics and Miniatures, you guys, I saw your Patreon, and you guys make another alliteration, of course, minis, maps, and modules for DMs, and they looked cool. What is Mimics and Miniatures about in your eyes?
So Phil started Mimics and Miniatures, and he had just recently gotten into tabletop and was really excited about doing modeling modeling. make sure that clarification's out there. and that really is more his story, but it was like, I'm seeing the lack of this, or I'm just really excited to do some sculpting. I love the idea that the mimic could be anything, but all we ever have as a miniature is a treasure chest, right? So let's play with that. What can we do with that? And so he did that as a, I think really is just a little COVID project. Whatever the term is for that. There should be a word for that.
I know.
In the history books, there'll be something, I'm sure.
There's going to be something.
Yeah. But anyways, so he started that and realized that you can't just have minis. You got to have more than that. So we're doing more than that. The modules, the maps. Personally, I'm a big maps and modules guy. So we are definitely more focused at this moment on getting this Reign of the Necromancer campaign out. So the modules and then the maps and minis to support it. But yeah. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Absolutely it does. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
How far are you guys into writing this too? Because I know it says it's level 1 to level 5 is the intention.
Yes. So it is scheduled at this point to be 12 adventure days. The play test that you did is adventure day 2. Adventure day 2 in my mind has basically two different paths you can walk. The path across the desert is going to be the more challenging, the more extreme, higher chance of danger, but the only chance of potentially catching the bandits before they disappear with the little girl, who may not remain as a little girl, but she is a little girl right now. The other path takes you around the desert. You get to avoid some of the bigger dangers, the more severe weather, but takes longer, and they end up branching quite a bit. But anyway, so that's day 2. It should be a total of 12 days. And right now I'm just polishing day 3 again. I really got stuck in day 3. So we still have quite a bit to go. It is intermittently, I'm working on the side. I'm also, I'm way into coffee. So working as a barista, doing some, I'm hoping, actually this is a totally random real life thing, but I'm hoping to compete in Coffee Masters here in a month or so. It's a competition that happens biannually. I think this year it's in London and then it'll be in New York, or it was just, anyways. But you should check out the competition. Like, I feel kind of out of my depth as I'm looking at past competitors.
That is untrue. I'm telling you what, imposter syndrome is real. Have to shut it up and just keep going.
So like I'm great with the coffee, but it's kind of like a coffee cocktail competition kind of thing. So most of the competitors seem to also be, on top of being great baristas, they seem to be these like fabulous mixologists, and that's just not, that's a newer world for me. So I'm excited about it. It's going to be fun. I'm going to submit for it here pretty soon, but we'll see what happens. Anyways,
good luck.
So doing that, this is a side project to fill in the hours that I don't have otherwise. So it's not something I'm sitting down and getting paid to do 40, 60 hours a week, but we're plugging away.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at with Talking XP too. We got a lot going on and we're just plugging away. So that's cool. Well, do you guys have any other projects other than Reign of the Necromancer? It seems like this is kind of your thing that you guys are working on at the moment, but is there anything else?
I don't have more, although as I have been writing, here's just one of my seeds that come up. If we do well enough that this is something I can do again, which I'm really hoping for, right? I think I have the beginnings of the next campaign, which I haven't thrown it out to anybody, so we'll just see your reaction here. It would be a monstrous campaign where you're starting as like a goblin defending your dungeon, dungeon king from invasion of humans, because it's a trope I see a lot randomly doing someone online, but I don't think I've actually seen a game module that's set up for that. So, start life as a goblin and defend the fortress, as it were.
To make a campaign, I've seen one shots that do that.
Yeah.
I've seen, Ryan, there's one that you were talking about that you play as the goblins in Mines of Phandelver, and you protect yourself from the adventurers that are coming into your land kind of thing. That's awesome. But I think like making a campaign would make it super interesting to like add like a monstrous culture and to make it sympathetic. I know that's not.
Yeah.
No, I think that is the right word. I think make it like sympathetic to, to where, you know, you could be like, oh, these are the creatures that I've been killing for so long, but they have like their own thing. I kind of feel like an asshole now. And that's the point. No, that would be super cool. I think that would be an awesome idea.
I'd love to make it so you're this like very self-aware, probably pretty clever. You stand out amongst other goblins. You know, you're both trying to defend your home from humans, but also trying not to get killed by your vicious friends. Kind of managing the politics of the dungeon while also defending your home. I see it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that could be a lot of fun for sure. All right, well, one-off question. What is your favorite part about TTRPGs or D&D?
Favorite part? I mean, it's definitely the people you play with, right? It's the the friends that like we're committing to coming together to play this game, even though maybe we're not the best of friends to begin with. But a year goes by and you're like, this is my mate, and we hang out all the time, and we've committed to hanging out once a week, and so our relationship has really developed, and I don't know what I'd do without this guy, you know? So definitely the relationships that are developed along the way.
Friendship. Friendship was always the answer.
I mean, the fact that we're doing this interview is a perfect example of that, you know, that D&D just brings people together, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, Jeremy, for joining us. We really appreciate you coming onto the show. And if anybody wants to check out Mimics and Miniatures, we'll have a link. Check out their Kickstarter. Follow them before they go launch. It's a lot of fun. We did their play test. Go ahead and check out our YouTube channel so you can check out the video of us actually playing it. It's a long one, so make sure to have your popcorn ready. And but it was a lot of fun. And yeah, go check it out, guys. Thank you. Thank you all for joining us. So make sure to level up, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.